Hey, this is Jen Johans at FilmIntuition.com and Film Intuition on social media and Letterboxd. And this is Watch with Jen. Returning to the podcast today, we have the very insightful Roxana Hadadi, a TV critic with Vulture who also writes about film and pop culture. Previously, Roxana was film editor and critic with Pajiba, and her reviews, essays, recaps, and other writing have also been published by the AV Club, Polygon, RogerEbert.com, the LA Times, Crooked Marquee, The Playlist, Fox Digital, GQ, and Inverse. Roxana, thank you so much for being here. How are you doing?
Thank you for having me. I have been doing okay. I mean, you know, same old, like, existential despair. But, like,
that's all of us right now. Yes.
That's all of us. Like, that's it. But otherwise, I've been doing okay. And I had, like, a very fun time preparing for this podcast. So I'm, like, very excited that we're doing this.
I love the idea. I just read today your wonderful, brilliant essay on 25th Hour for Brightwell Darkroom. So I'm very looking forward to doing this. Edward Norton was one of my favorite actors in the 90s, like from the minute I saw Primal Fear. Mm-hmm. I kind of switched off of Robert De Niro around Ronin time. My crush ended, sidled right into, you know what? Edward Norton got in there. He was the next guy, basically. I loved Norton. And I think what I loved so much was the mystique and this whole idea of him kind of conning the casting agents, that whole thing with Primal Fear, and just this idea of someone who took their craft seriously and kind of got into it and wasn't just trying to be a pretty face and coasting. Mm-hmm. So I was really excited when you wanted to do Edward Norton. Thank you so much for doing this.
Yeah, I think everything that you just said about, like, not wanting to be a pretty face, like, I think we, and in general, like, film Twitter, the, like, film discourse community these days, like, we're very stuck on, and I think this is right, but we are very stuck on the lack of, like, character actors in this, like, new era. Mm-hmm. Like, it feels like, at a time when there are so many, like, Nepo babies and so many, like, child stars, people who came up through, like, Disney or Nickelodeon, it is very difficult to find sort of, like, the interloper in that group. Like,
yeah,
one who is more willing to be, like, a weird little freak.
Exactly.
You know, and I think that's why people like Barry Keoghan, or like a little bit more drawn to like a few of those sort of outsider types in our current like rising class of actors. But when we started getting ready for this, I was thinking about like the 90s and how very much it felt like Norton was like carrying that flag of someone who, like, he absolutely grew up with privilege. I think his mm-hmm. grandfather created the community in which I now live in Maryland. So he came from, you know, like, money. But I think that he made, like, a series of very interesting choices in that early time period of his career that did not play into, like, what you just said, like, the pretty boy face mm-hmm. or sort of, like, the rom-com route. Like, I feel like he did very few of those. I don't want to say approachable, because I don't think he wasn't approachable as an actor, but there was very much like a genre ladder that you had to go through, I think, in that time period. Mm-hmm. And I feel like he skipped a lot of the rungs to just immediately start doing like serious dramas and thrillers. And then almost like later in his career is when he started doing like the sci-fi stuff, right? And like the Wes Anderson partnership and more of like the comedic sort of work. Whereas in the beginning, it was like the bang of like Primal Fear, right? Larry Flint, Fight Club, like Kingdom of Heaven. Like we really started with
American
like a
History X.
series. American History
Yeah.
X, American History X, Jen, a movie that I did not let my father watch all of. He was unaware of how it actually ended. I was
Okay.
like, this will make you too sad, so I'm just gonna turn it off.
Yeah.
And he was like, oh, that was a nice story. I was like, yeah,
That's a good
I'm
way of
glad
it.
you enjoyed it. But yeah,
Oh.
okay, so you had like an early era Norton crush. What
Yep.
impressed you about Norton?
I think I was just always impressed by the precocious types. I was that, nerd who started college a couple years too early and, didn't really fit in. And so I liked this idea of him sort of embracing not fitting in, but also kind of making a game of it and, basically pretending he was the guy from the South when he did his audition for Primal Fear and getting that role. I loved that. You could also tell that he gave a shit, which was cool. He wasn't in the PR interviews. And this is to his benefit and his detriment and
Detriment, yeah.
things that would come out later, and this isn't a gossip show, we won't get into all of that, but that he really did care and he wanted to make sure the work was at a level that he thought it was. Sometimes he wanted to wear all the hats behind the scenes, and he's been open about that, and other people have talked about that. But I did admire that right away. He seemed to admire the old guard. You could see a little bit of the twitchiness of like Dustin Hoffman and De Niro, kind of like you could with Sean Penn in the 80s. Vincent D'Onofrio is another one of my favorites. And you could see a little bit of like who the actors are that they look up to, like Sam Rockwell, before he even said, "I'm a John Cazale
Yes.
guy," you're like, "You're a John
Yes.
Cazale guy." So
Yes.
I did love all of those things, I think.
Yeah, I was trying to, when we were preparing for this, think about like what I saw him in first. And I do think it was Fight Club. And
Okay.
I'm curious if you feel, do you feel like Fight Club was his breakout, or do you think Primal Fear was like the real breakout? Like, what do you think about his chronology, I guess, is my question.
I kind of think it was Primal Fear, at least in my little nerdy circle. And also, you couldn't turn the TV on for a while without seeing like Siskel and Ebert, or just people going, "Who is this guy?" And like, I think he won the Golden Globe that year for that performance. I think he had to wait. I don't, he was nominated for American History X. I know that. I don't remember for Primal Fear. But I do think it was Primal Fear. All of a sudden, we were paying attention to that. I know I saw Larry Flint back then, but it really didn't do too much. Like, I didn't remember the movie very much. American History X, of course, left a big impression. Fight Club. I remember when he got around to like the score and stuff like that, it felt like he was kind of doing what he did already. And then when he was as far back as like 99, wanting to make Motherless Brooklyn, which is one of my favorite books, I feel like I wish he could have made it back then because I didn't love the new, recent version, because I think he would have been the right age and it would have been, but at the same time, I think seeing Primal Fear and then the score, and that would have been maybe too much. We would have maybe considered him a one-trick pony. But I like what you were saying. I actually also loved Keeping the Faith, which came out in 2000. That was his directorial debut. I think it was a friend from Yale, I believe, was the writer. And that movie is just so heartfelt and funny. And yeah, he wasn't somebody who was in a bunch of rom-coms, but I do love that movie.
No, I think that's so interesting because I, even as you were just saying, like Primal Fear, Larry Flint, American History X, I know again, this is something that like I always harp on, especially when we talk, but like when we had network TV and cable TV, Like, I feel like these were shows, these were movies that were on constantly, right? Like, I really do feel like I saw Primal Fear on TV. So I saw like an edited version of it, but like I saw it on TV. Fight Club was on, again, edited version, but like constantly on. American History X was constantly on. Like, it's very interesting that in this era, he had like a series of very intense, like, just like you said, like turn on a dime, like flip the switch performances that then were rerun constantly, right? Like, I feel like you could not turn on the TV without getting a sense of like what Edward Norton was trying to do. And in that time period where we had like the slickness of Brad Pitt and like the slickness of George Clooney, and we had like the blockbuster assurance of like Will Smith, and we also had like Damon and Affleck. Like, we had a lot of these sort of like similarly aged actors. It always felt to me, watching those performances, like Norton was doing something gutsier and like a little bit more daring and like more willing to be really unlikable. Like, he was very willing, I think, to play characters who were assholes, absolutely, but also like hated. And that's something that I really admire. I mean, I love 25th Hour for like a lot of reasons, but I do like that so much of that movie is like Monty being aware of like what a fuck up he is and like how much he has ruined the lives of his friends and family, but also to a certain degree being completely unrepentant about it. And I think being unrepentant is something that like Norton did very, very well. And this doesn't, like you said, this doesn't have to be like a, it isn't a gossip podcast or like a what could have been podcast, but I do wish he was in more things sort of in that register. I don't always think that like his Wes Anderson stuff, as much as I enjoy it, is really in that same like space.
I agree.
But I miss it. Like, he was so good at
He was. Yeah. And listening to you, I think it's really interesting because I'm a little bit older and I remember seeing like all of these movies, except for, okay, Flint and American History X, I saw on DVD, but everything else pretty much I saw in the theater. Like right away, it was people were excited. I remember going to Fight Club a couple times in the theater, and it was really cool because you would hear couples and people having conversations and like somebody talking to girls like, oh, you guys are just here for, Brad Pitt. And it was cool to hear like, no, we're fans of Edward Norton. Like people were excited. And I was thinking of everything you were saying and, our character actors in this era, like Nick Cage was making The Rock in Con Air. He kind of had checked out of doing that. And
Smaller
so we
indie
needed
stuff,
other
yeah.
people to kind of step into that space. Liev Schreiber was starting to step into that space, and Norton and Liev would make a really good movie called The Painted Veil. I'm sure you saw like a decade later. And so it was kind of cool to see who's going to pick up the mantle of these 70s guys. And so I think for a little bit there, Norton was the guy for that for sure.
And I think to your point also, like, he really wanted to be the guy also, right? Like, I didn't read a ton of interviews, but I watched a few for the 25th Hour piece, and like he very much even back then was talking about like what's the kind of filmmaker he wants to be, like reading the script and like suggesting changes, and that doesn't rub everyone the right way. But
No, but he cared,
I but he cared. Yeah, like I respected that there was sort of a willingness to think, what would my character do? And like, what makes sense for me as a performer? And especially with Fight Club, I have a hard time And this would probably be a fun thing for me to read if I had prepared better for this podcast. Forgive me, Jen. But to
No.
read, like, who else was in the running for Fight Club? Because it's so hard for me to even try to, like, imagine a different actor in that
Yeah.
role because he feels like he fits so well into that Fincher space of, like, very disaffected protagonist. And obviously, like, Brad Pitt was working with Fincher for the second time, but there are so many things Norton does in that performance, like so many like little faces of like self-disgust and disgust with the world around him that feel very like barbed and toxic, and you need them to balance out Pitt, who I think in this time period was always playing a little bit smarmy and like a little bit asshole and a little bit comedic. And Norton really balanced that out in Fight Club. I do remember Fight Club was my 16th birthday sleepover movie choice. And I then became like very obsessed with it. And I had printed out a series. It was like three pictures from some photo shoot that I had printed out. And it's like Norton holding a piece of paper that says fuck and a piece of paper that says you. And then the last picture is like him giving double fingers to the
Oh, I
camera.
remember that.
Yes. And I had printed these out and put them on my bedroom wall. And like years later, my parents like had not messed with my childhood bedroom. I was in college. And I came home, and everything else in my room was untouched, but those three pictures were down. I asked my dad, and I was like, "What happened here?" And he told me that like my little cousins had come to visit, and I had
Oh,
been
okay.
unable to make it home, and they went up to my bedroom because he was like, "Go hang out in her bedroom," and they saw it, and then were mimicking it, and so my dad had to be like, "Let me just take down these." Let me take down these pictures. But that was the vibe, right? That was like Edward Norton, give no fucks, like sort of acting on the edge type vibe. And I will always treasure that Fight Club performance for feeling like it was very tonally correct with the novel and very tonally correct with the world that Fincher had built. So I think that's why I asked you like what you think the breakout was, because to me it feels like Fight Club is the enduring role that a lot of people associate him with, but I probably am not paying enough attention or respect to how much Primal Fear like blew people's fucking minds.
In that kind of way that you're gonna be like, Jen, why'd you bring him up? But that Usual Suspects did.
The Kevin Spacey way. Yeah,
Yeah,
100%.
because it both of these things involve twists and
Yes.
but I was also just thinking about Norton and precocious, and I loved accents. I was like the worst actor of all time. I did a little bit of community theater and some musicals because I could sing, but I couldn't act out of a paper bag. Like I was the worst. But my boss, when I worked at Hallmark, the store in the mall, would let me just kind of run wild, do whatever. And so I would put on accents for a day. Like that
Oh
was
my
my thing. And I
God.
think I was probably inspired by Norton doing that. And I had just seen Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil
Oh my
and so
God.
decided I'm going to be from Savannah. People were so nice. And I just stayed in the accent all day. And it became like a game I would play. Like, I'm just from Savannah, Georgia. And I moved up to Minneapolis. And, and so I was thinking about it. Yeah. So Primal Fear, I would say, would be the big one for me. I remember when I would babysit, I would recommend movies for people to see. And I was one of those like nerdy kids. My DARE officer, actually, I didn't know this, lived on the next block and
Okay.
so recruited me into babysitting when I was like in fourth grade. She called my parents and they had the wildest kids too, like four kids, and I'm like 10 years old babysitting for them. And so like all of a sudden I'm the babysitter of the cops in the neighborhood, and I
Oh my
remember not
God.
even thinking of the content, and I had just seen Primal Fear, and I told one of them, yeah, go to Primal Fear, it's amazing. And then He's like, yeah, that guy. Oh my God, he was great on the way home. And then he's like, so did you see this with your friends? I'm like, oh no, I went with my parents. You saw this with your parents?
I
Like,
love
we
that.
didn't know what it
At
contained.
10, I love
No,
that, Jen.
years later, but I
Oh,
was
okay.
becoming the babysitter of the
Yes.
neighborhood,
Yes.
started at 10 of all the cops. And then years later, it was, well, if you get her to babysit, she will tell you a good movie to see. And
Yes.
then, on the way home, it was like, you saw Primal Fear with your parents? Like,
That's
we didn't
amazing.
know.
Yeah, how could you have known? But the
We
other
had
thing
no idea.
to your point about that is like that used to be, again, I'm like the old person like yelling at clouds, but like that kind of quick twist or like
Yeah,
Usual Suspects
wasn't
type of
spoiled.
twist. Yeah, like wasn't spoiled. Like we didn't have the curse of the internet like ruining things for us. And again, you had like a legal thriller that was occupying that like must-see movie space. And I definitely
Yeah.
thought about that like this summer because at Vulture, obviously we covered like Presumed Innocent, the TV show, like
Which
a
was
lot
excellent. Yeah.
because it felt like the Apple TV formula had like finally broken out. And I remember looking up the movie and I was like, oh, this movie made hundreds of billions of
I know.
It
Like,
was a
this was
time
the
when
era.
people, yeah, this was the era. It was the time when, like, you could be Edward Norton giving, like, a freaky, weird performance, and that was, like, enough to make you a name, right? Like, that
Yeah,
was
and
the
Laura
thing.
Linney is so good in it too. Like,
Yes.
all of a sudden you're like,
Yes.
wow, who are the Andre Brower is in it? I mean, just
Yes.
Fran McDormand has a small role. Like,
You could
and
just keep naming people. I mean, it's one of
yeah,
those
it's
things where it's
incredible.
like, it's incredible. And to your point also, and like you talk about this a lot, like acting being like a dynamic, being a relationship, like Norton's work is so successful because Gear is also so good.
Oh my
Gear's
God,
shocked,
amazing.
right? Like exceptional. And I think that really was something that Norton was very good at. He was very good at two-handers, I think.
He
Like,
was. You know, sometimes you can see, like Michael Douglas has talked about this a lot. Like, when you act with especially up and coming people, you can just tell they're like waiting for their close up, or when it's the camera isn't on them, they're not really giving you what they should be giving you. And like he talked about Tobey Maguire in Wonder Boys just like being almost better when the camera wasn't on him, essentially. And you can kind of tell like Gere and Norton are marveling at each other, and they're like kind of raising each other's game. And I'm friends with a few actors who love to talk about when you get another actor to actually laugh. And it's a real laugh and not a fake laugh. Like, that is so exciting to them. And you can kind of see like Gere's eyes, and Norton, like they're feeding off of each other. And I think what you were saying was so smart too about how he was gutsy enough to play these parts, because there are a lot of actors, especially on TV shows, where they want to be heroic. They want, because they're worried about getting future parts. And I mean,
100%.
I totally get that. Like, they have bills to pay, families, mortgages, like everybody else. And Norton was like, I'll do this, sure. And for the first time out, just going for it. Yeah.
And very much that, like, very much just going for it. And it's also something that I think about with like American History X. Like, we've joked. I have joked. I don't want to assume for you, but like I have joked about how like the Nazi redemption arc has become something that so many actors now either have to play or choose to play, but it's like the three billboards formula. Garrett Hedlund has done this, like the idea of being a neo-Nazi who then realizes that they did something wrong is like very prevalent in those movies.
Yeah.
But like, has anybody done a better version of that?
No, I mean, there was a movie after that a couple years later, wasn't it Gosling, The Believer, something like that?
Believer is like But
Excellent.
believer, I think you can argue that he's not ever repentant. I mean, the ending, I
Yes.
think, does
Yes.
make it like very ambiguous about how he feels. But I'm sorry, I cut you off. Yes.
No, I
American
almost
History
think like
X.
those two, because they came out within a couple years of
Yeah.
each other. And so I was just thinking like how The Believer and American History X were kind of at the forefront of movies in our era, at least, that were kind of, and now it is a thing, like you get these all the time, like, oh, he's a racist, but you know what? He's gonna change, or he's, you know, that kind of thing.
He's going
Or
to
he
meet the
says
right
horrible
person
things,
who
like he's a
changes for him.
curmudgeon, but you know,
Yes,
yeah,
yes,
that kind of
yes,
thing. And
yes.
sometimes it works and sometimes it does not. And I think those two movies, American History X and The Believer, for different reasons, were more uncompromising and bolder. For
More
yeah, and I
willing to
think a lot
just
of that
be,
is the actors, yeah.
yeah, more willing to be incredibly uncomfortable.
Oh
Right.
yeah.
I mean, I think about also that era of like Fairuzza Balk, right? Like
My
American History X
goodness.
and The
Yes.
Craft.
Yes. One of our mutual friend Jordan Harper's favorite women, Fairuzza Balk.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, she was
Yes.
amazing. Yeah.
She is amazing. But yeah, so I think that I don't think we watched American History X in school. I think that it
Okay.
probably was like a little bit too intense. But
I
I
saw
did
it with the
remember.
flu. I mean, that was
Did you
crazy.
really?
Yes, I like
That's
rented it
amazing.
and I'm like, what is going on? I had a fever. It was intense. Yeah.
But yeah, like so good in that. And just again, like we talk a lot about like body transformations. And
Yes.
Norton really was doing that, right? Like from Primal Fear to American History X, and then of course Fight Club, where the body becomes like its own sort of
Emaciated and yeah.
weapon. Yeah, like emaciated, gaunt, but also like really wiry
Yes.
and like a little bit grotesque.
Yeah.
But yeah, like American History X really was up there. And then yeah, Fight Club, like I don't know what there is to say about, I mean, there is so much to say about Fight Club, about how it's been like misinterpreted and like how it has
Yeah.
retained like cult classic quality. But I'm curious for you, what works for you about Fight Club? Like, where does it sit in your Norton ranking?
I love it. I did an episode with Fight Club and Zero Effect with Noah Gyttel, and we were talking about unreliable narrators and just kind of this idea of questioning reality and point of view, because both of those movies came out, I think, within a year. Zero Effect was like 98, a totally different movie. But also, what is the strange link now that I'm thinking about it is Ben Stiller in the one, and then Hello, Keeping the Faith. But I'm just going to keep mentioning that movie.
That's
No.
fine. We need to, after we talk about Fight Club, I need you to go long on keeping
Keeping the
the
Faith. I love it. Yes, but Fight Club is a film I love. I love how a woman was the only one with the balls to make the film. Like it had been turned down everywhere. And it was the woman at Fox going, we're going to make this movie. Fincher, I was already a fan of Fincher because of The Game. I still love The
Game.
Game. I think it's
So
just
good.
brilliant. I wrote a review of it for my high school paper. I was like that kid who was writing stuff mainly for the teachers. Like, I'm like, you know what? I know what you did last summer blows. Let's write about Mammoth
Let's talk
and
about the
like
game.
The Game. Yeah. So I was there doing like Spanish Prisoner in The Game and LA Confidential. But I love The Game. I love Fincher. And so I was much more excited. I was not a big Brad Pitt fan. I liked him in some of his character parts, but I was not a huge Pitt person until I saw Fight Club. I think that was the film that turned me around on Pitt because I felt like he was poking fun at his persona a bit, kind of like it's been said, I don't love the movie, but like Norton sort of did in Birdman as a difficult actor. He kind of was maybe satirizing himself a little bit. But you have Pitt, you almost need Pitt to do that because every guy in that era wanted to be Brad Pitt or George Clooney. And so we needed one of those guys. I think Norton was kind of a wild card for that. It is really hard to think of another actor. The only one I can think of in that era that probably would have been good, but it would have been a different performance, would have been Sam Rockwell. That's the only one I can think of, possibly. But I love it. I am a sucker for first person. I mean, I'm a Paul Schrader person, so I love voiceover narration. I love the idea of questioning what we're seeing. So, I was taking film classes in college at the time. So that whole scene where you would, the cigarette burns and then what we're seeing and the IKEA catalog coming to life
IKEA catalog.
it blew my mind. And I felt like this is a really cool movie that tells you what you can do with the medium. But then when you're actually talking about what the film is about, it's kind of a definitive Gen X picture, which is interesting because I wrote my thesis on sex, lies, and videotape. And that is kind of another definitive
It is, yeah.
Gen X movie. And Norton talked about the one key speech that James Spader gives as like tapping into the zeitgeist of his entire generation. Like, you only want the one key, you want the minimal. Like, what are we doing with the consumerism? I almost feel like that kind of came back around again 10 years later. So 89 to 99, you have that in Fight Club. Also 89 was Say Anything, and Cameron Crowe actually did give some ideas for Fight Club, for the script, which is
What? I
fascinating.
did not know that. That's
Yes.
fascinating.
And when you think of Cameron Crowe's speech that he wrote and Say Anything about, I don't want to buy anything, sell anything,
Yes.
used, sold, or processed. So I kind of think it's, every 10 years there, we were questioning what did we inherit from our parents and what do we want? And so those pictures together are interesting to me. Yeah, as a Gen Xer.
I love that as a Gen X through line. And especially just, I mean, I was in high school. I was a high schooler who felt very lonely and like very disconnected and out of touch from the world around me. And so much of that, so much of the Brad Pitt speech against like our parents and what we have inherited and what is the status quo. Of course, the very iconic, you're not your fucking khakis. Like to a certain degree, yes, that is meant to be like a mockery even of like rebellion. Like the book is somewhat more clear, I think, about it being a little bit facetious or misguided. But I do think the reality of the film is that it came out at a time when those things still felt very real and very prevalent, like the neoliberal 90s, the assumption that all of these things would make you happy, as much as the book mocked a little bit of pushing against those qualities. I think the film honors them a little bit more, and I do think if you connect with that, I don't think that's a bad thing. I think probably maybe doing some domestic terrorism is like not so great, but but again, nobody was meant to get hurt during the domestic terrorism. It's just meant to be destruction of property, which like whatever. But yeah, I love the idea of every 10 years we get like a retread of that. And it really makes me think, like, what were our most recent examples
Yeah, I think
of this?
2019 was a big year. I'm trying to remember, but yeah.
I'm trying to remember too. And like the killer, Fincher's The Killer did not work for me at all, but
No.
I do agree with people thinking like Michael Fassbender's life as an assassin is meant to be that same like single serving life type of thing.
Yes, this vacuous, empty. Yeah.
Yeah,
I think we're
that's so.
coasting and we're numb is kind of the, and so people will go to extremes just to feel something. Yep.
And I mean, again, to that point, like the you've hit rock bottom, chemical burn, right? Like Fight Club
Yeah.
has so many of those ideas, and Brad Pitt can only be that suave and that attractive and that compelling. against someone who seemingly is average, right? And Norton does like shockingly good job playing someone who you assume is average. But when when that movie unravels and you see the scenes of him beating himself up,
Yes.
obviously when he beats himself up in his boss's office, and just all of the filling in of when he is
Is playing
Tyler
with point of
Durden,
view and yeah.
versus being himself, like all of that hinges on us buying that Norton could play someone who would do those things and play someone who would be disgusted by himself doing those things,
I
right? Like that
agree.
split personality only works because Norton is doing it. I can't, funnily enough, I can't imagine Brad Pitt playing
No, not at all.
Norton,
And that's, it's
right?
just they're different actors. And like, I can't imagine Norton doing some of the movies that Brad has done. But yeah, I agree with you. It is interesting too. I mean, they have talked about it being essentially The Graduate. So they were looking at it as sort of a generational thing. But even in 99, like watching it, I walked out of that seeing all of the homoerotic subtext, and it was fascinating to me how many people did not. And so years later, it was like, oh, it's pretty gay. Or like, because I don't think Chuck Palahniuk hadn't come out yet. And so it's like, watch it again, people. And I think, like, one of my film professors, my favorite, he's gay. And he's like, so basically, it was mostly the women. And like, my friends and I were like, it's so fucking gay. And like,
Love that.
and so it was interesting. Yeah. I mean, everyone is going to see something different in that film, of course. And I think, and it's all of these things. It's not one thing.
I definitely think it's all of those things. I think for me, it took a little bit of time to see the gay subtext because I was your typical, as people always say, the like bro fandom of this movie. I was very enthralled in the like society bad
Oh, yeah.
aspect of it, which I do still think is like very unrelenting and honestly like still very appealing and not wrong.
It's still extremely timely. Like, I mean, credit card companies and the debt and some of the things there, the questions that it's raising, the political is personal, and all of these things intertwined, kind of like, Norton touching on this stuff. These are issues. He's a very progressive person. His father was an environmental, he was a Marine, and then he worked for Jimmy Carter. I mean, so Norton does go after these things that do have points, like bigger picture ideas. And this was around the time of Larry Flint, of course, with the First Amendment, and then a couple years later with 25th Hour. Yeah. Which film did you want to move on to, Roxana?
I feel like we should just dive into 25th Hour. Like I like Flint. I think that he is good in it.
It's a minor
Again,
part.
it's a minor part. We don't need to talk about the gossip of it all, but I will say that I love Courtney Love being like, maybe I should have married Edward Norton. That is a
I
really
know. Yes.
amazing
I
era
had
of
one good
gossip.
boyfriend, and it was Edward Norton. Yes.
Can you imagine? I cannot even imagine. But that is so, again, that is such a funny isn't the right word, but just so reflective of that time. I think that the two of them could be together. But yeah, I think, yeah, let's talk about 25th Hour. I have talked a lot recently about 25th Hour, so I want to know all of your thoughts on this film. Where is it in like your Spike Lee filmography? Were you a fan of the book already? I completely see what you're saying about Norton being drawn to these types of projects. I think this is like the highest one. I think that probably fits like a lot of the different boxes of what he believes, but I want to know what you think.
Sure. And what's interesting is Tobey Maguire wanted to make this one, talking about another
Yes.
actor who, like Michael Douglas, cited as being kind of the antithesis of younger actors without naming the other younger actors, as
But
someone who was in these scenes.
also just amazing because I think most people are still going to see Toby as just Spider-Man. So again, like a sort of like sliding doors, what could have happened in Hollywood thing. It is really like a mind fuck to think, what
Had
if
done
Toby
25th Hour. Yes, I am a huge Spike Lee fan. I gave the book the Academy Museum put together on Spike Lee to a friend's son last year for Christmas, because he loves cinema. I think 25th Hour is one of Spike's best. It's kind of the joke, like, Quentin Tarantino makes the joke, like, all the moms and all the old people love Jackie Brown. I love the Jackie Brown. And Spike Lee, I mean, there's the joke, I can't remember who said, like, oh, if somebody talks about Spike Lee, it's going to be a white person talking about 25th Hour, that
Fifth
kind of
hour,
thing.
100%.
That's a
Yes,
joke.
yes.
And you know what? But I love a lot of Spike Lee movies, but this is definitely one of my faves. I saw it in the theater. And what was interesting is I went in knowing very little. I had not read the book by David Benioff. And what was, it was a pretty empty theater. I was living in Mesa at the time, and it was like the first show of the day, essentially. And some woman decided she was going to sit in my row, like four seats away from me, which
Why?
was really
Why?
random. And I think today I'd probably get up and
And
leave,
leave. Yeah.
but I was just like, okay. And so we're sitting there. And then when we got to the scene with Philip Seymour Hoffman and Barry Pepper, and we're looking out, and all of a sudden it didn't dawn on us right away what we were seeing. And this woman, we hadn't exchanged any words before this. She just turned to me and said, "Is that?" And it clicked for both of us at the same time. And we both just burst into tears in the theater. And it was almost like, good to have somebody four seats away going through this same emotional, visceral reaction at the same time. So I remember the power of that moment, and also the power of a couple scenes in the movie. That one for sure. Also, the speech in the bathroom, which is very like Spike, do the right thing. It's very like that's what he does. Also, the scene where he cajoles Barry Pepper into beating him up is just one of the most
Oh my
harrowing
God.
Sidney Lumet kind of things that, he has done. And then the ending, the beauty of that ending, like especially the fantasy of Brian Cox helping him escape and him going out west, seeing it after I had like just moved out west, was especially moving. So I have a lot of fondness for this movie. I love it.
I think what you said about being so emotionally moved when you realize that it's ground zero, like I still can't wrap my head really around the fact that they made this movie when they did, right? Like 9/11 happens, Norton and Spike Lee are at like a benefit party together, and I think Spike had already been thinking about doing the movie, and then that's when they decide to like team up. And it just is so. Think maybe just like the sign of an artist that you would think, like, no, this story still works after this tragedy. And not only does it still work after this tragedy, it adds even more to the story, right? Because the way that I came into it was I, again, because of my horrendous memory, I definitely did not see it in the theater. I'm pretty sure that I saw it in college, and I think it was in connection with I took a class either junior year or senior year that was like fiction of New York. So it was like books and plays and movies and stuff that were about New York. And I think we were able to pick like one off syllabus thing that we were going to see. And I think that this was on the like suggested list. So I saw it in college, had my own very like complicated feelings about 9/11 and like what I experienced after that as someone who's Iranian American and was raised Muslim. And I saw how much it affected my parents and like how quickly things changed, right? So I think the movie on a baseline level was immediately so fascinating to me because I think one of my first reactions was like, yes, this is about Edward Norton's character and what he's going through as a drug dealer on his last night of freedom, trying to figure out what are the next 7 years of his life, what are the mistakes that he's made, all of that. But I think for whatever reason, maybe because it was like the New York framing of that class, and I still, my favorite book is Great Gatsby, and so that feels very
That's my
much
favorite book.
yeah, so I feel like that still feels very much like the man is America. It just felt like, oh, Monty Brod, like he's America. Like he is someone who is grappling with this thing that has happened to him that feels like a culmination of a variety of past mistakes. And there is a clearly demarcated line between who he was before this happened and who he's going to be after that happened. And so I think like that read was very immediate to me. And then it really became about like my interest in watching other Spike Lee things, because like I'd seen Malcolm X, but then seeing Inside Man and how Inside Man also dealt with a post
I love that film
9/11
too.
arc. Like Inside Man is just like wah. But yeah, but that initial read of 25th Hour of like, oh, this is about something that we lost and we thought was so integral to our identity as Americans and as America. And again, Norton is like the guy. He is the guy to do that for us, right? Because I think the way that this movie opens, it is in flashback, it is in him taking care of this dog that has been abandoned. And so you immediately have that, like, oh, Edward Norton is a guy who can project like a very brusque, no-nonsense sort of attitude, but there is like compassion underneath there. And then the entire rest of the movie is just about like toggling between those extremes, right? And like all of the layers of his self-loathing. And you brought up Barry Pepper. I really think that the only other person I could see maybe doing Norton's role in Fight Club is Barry Pepper, because I think there's
He
something
is
about
a
them.
really good actor.
Yeah, there's something about them that I find really similar. But on my rewatch, I think, of course, I was like, okay, Norton's great. Obviously, like, Norton's good. Brian Cox is good. Like, Summer Hoffman is good. But, like, Barry Pepper, I think, sort of like knocked me on my ass in this most
Oh my
recent
God, I know, because I
rewatch.
think the like I'd seen him in some other stuff, but I think this was around the time like Billy Crystal made that movie 61 for HBO, and that was Barry Pepper, and really was like, whoa, I'd seen him in other things, but that all of a sudden, then I saw this and it was like, wow, to see what he could do and what his range was. I think what you were saying was also really interesting because this is a film where it really kind of gets to the heart of America. I mean, you have the wanting the American dream, taking a shortcut, feeling like thing you're owed things, but also having this sense of just like everyone always says that they're middle class, like that was a statistic when I took poli sci. Like, it doesn't matter if you make $10,000 or you make 300 a year thousand, you're going to say you're middle class because
Yeah.
you don't want to be anything else. And so, you have that like, I'm a hard worker, I'm a pull myself up by the bootstraps thing, but on the misery of other people, like that line is in there. It's also an interesting movie. The roles for the women are complicated. They're, kind of shortchanged. They're going to be, there's an Othello kind of aspect to the Rosario Dawson thing, like, another guy, oh, she dropped the dime on you and he's going to believe him over his own girlfriend, that kind of thing, until he realizes the dude who said that is the bad guy, the Iago of it all.
Tony Saragusa, noted Ravens legend. Yeah, shocking.
Yeah, such a powerful film. I will say it was weird this, coming around the same time, Anna Paquin played a very similar role in The Squid and the Whale with Jeff Daniels, where it was like she's this sexy college student, or in this case, high school student. And it was just like, what were we doing with Anna Paquin? Like, another, could we have given her some better things to do, or like some more dimension here? But but then again,
Paquin's
she gets to
career.
work with Bumbach and Spike Lee, and I'm sure,
Yes.
I mean, you're
Yes.
not going to turn that down. I
No.
love the expressionistic, the photography, neon, chiaroscuro. I love the needle drops in this movie are fabulous. Brian Cox is good. It's a film about grief, and the choices that we made. I think also questions of, do we give people second chances in this country? That is a question. And it's interesting because we're dealing with a different aspect or a different side of addiction here. And then in Fight Club, you have characters who the only way they can feel things or like get through emotion is by pretending that they have
Yeah.
these terrible diseases or addictions and going to 12-step programs, and kind of how an addiction, you might trade addictions. People, I have a lot of friends who are in recovery, and they've traded, they go to cigarettes and then vapes and then that kind of thing, then the gum. And it's, when does this stuff become something else? And so he might see himself as above these people, but he has his own addictions. Also, question of identity is an important one in this movie, especially with her character and the way she's treated subtly by other, like Barry Pepper, for example. Yeah,
What
it's a
does it mean to
complicated one.
be, what does it mean to be American? What does it
Yes.
mean to be a New Yorker,
Yeah.
right? Like, what are those identities? To go back to your question of like, what am I owed? I
Yes.
think that that is handled really well with all, I'm going to consider the three friends the protagonist here, but like Philip Seymour Hoffman's character being a high school teacher and thinking maybe he is owed this
Yeah.
kiss with Anna Paquin, right? Like he's
Yeah,
been good.
rationalizing it.
Yeah, he's been good. Like he hasn't done anything wrong. Barry Pepper being a stockbroker and considering himself like Edward Norton's character's like closest friend. Maybe when Norton goes to prison,
He's
he is
gonna go after. Yeah.
relationship with Rosario Dawson, right? So all of these questions, like all of these like little bargains we make with ourselves about like what we earn and our worth. And I was really compelled by what you said about addiction because I think for me, so much of this film tied to that question of the American dream and tied to worth is about compartmentalization.
Yes.
And I think the movie really tells you that visually because of the way that Norton moves through space, like walking his dog, driving this muscle car, living in this like very nicely decorated apartment over the park. Like he is in all of these sort of rarefied or protected spaces. So much so that when he, is taken in by the DEA, they are agents of color. There is a black agent, like there,
They're amazing. Yeah. The
Isaiah
actors.
Whitlock, is that correct?
Yes. Yes.
Yes, I'm thinking Senator Clay Davis from The Wire. But yeah, so that again is like, this is not what Monty would expect, right? Like his life is very organized. He is not meant to be caught, and certainly not caught by non-white police officers. And I think what's really, again, part of my, I can't believe that they made this movie so soon after 9/11. I cannot believe that they did the speech in the movie, because the speech is in the book. But what Spike has said is that when Benioff turned in the script, because he adapted his own novel, the speech was not in it. And Benioff told Spike, like, he couldn't figure out a way to make it cinematic. And Spike Lee was like, that's my job. Like, you don't need to worry about it. So they, like, added it back in. But that speech and how well it brings together stereotype and cliche and resentment and hatred, and how it so well turns this idea of, like, New York City is a melting pot where everybody lives together and, like, everything is fine and everything is great,
We all
especially in
hate
this.
each other as much as we love each
Yeah,
other.
exactly. Especially in this post 9/11 space. I would not be so bold as to say, like, I think it's the most radical thing Spike has done, because he has done countless radical things. But I think for that time period, like, to make that movie in that time period and release it, like, I think about, like, he must have had phenomenal power over the product, right? Because I can't think about making that type of movie that is so complicated, just so complicated, and doing so many different things politically. I think it's really hard to figure out how we would make something like that now. And I mentioned this in my Bright Wall Dark Room essay, but I really think about this movie a lot in connection to Reluctant Fundamentalist, because that feels
I
like,
love that film.
I love that film, and I think that book and 25th Hour are really interesting dueling perspectives of, like, the American dream and what is it to make it in this country, and what does that do to your soul, right, and to your interiority. But I think about, like, Reluctant Fundamentalist, like, that flopped. Like, people were not, 10 years after 25th Hour, people were not interested in a movie about 9/11 from a perspective of someone who was radicalized by it, right? So I still really go back to 25th Hour as, like, I still can't believe that we made it. I still can't believe that it has, like, the subtext that it does.
The
And I would
speech is in
be.
a fireman bar, which is crazy.
The speech is just, like, that speech is everything that Norton's Fight Club performance is in, like, 3 minutes of runtime. Like, it's so highly compressed. But I have always wanted to, like, read an interview with Spike about it, like, now, right? Like, what does he think about it now? And I know that I think GQ did a piece on, like, the 10th anniversary that was mostly just about how they practically did the film, like, how they were able to like, go into pre-production so early, and, like, what parts of New York were they in. But I really would like to know, like, politically, what does Spike think about this movie, like, years later? I don't know if I think it's Norton's best performance, but I think it's something that probably, like, unlocks his appeal for me most clearly, if that makes sense.
I think a lot of people wouldn't have been able to pull off that speech. It would have been too self-consciously actorly. Like, oh, this is my monologue, and kind of like actors can sink or swim with Shakespeare, or can sink or swim with comedy almost more than, but like Norton has to do so many different things in that speech, and I think it shows just the complexity and not only, like the self-loathing, but also just the sadness. There's rage, there's a little humor, like you find yourself laughing, shocking, you're shocked at some of the things, like about his friends, that kind of stuff. And then you're appalled and like, ugh, like, just to have these thoughts. And he's doing all of this at once, which again, there is something a little bit about Shakespeare in this this movie, I think is interesting. And I like what you were saying about Reluctant Fundamentalist. I remember seeing that one in the theater. There weren't enough people in that auditorium either, but it reminds me of one of my favorite stories. Mir Nayir talked about with Spike is when she was doing Mississippi Masala, Spike warned her. So like Denzel doesn't like to take his shirt off. I don't know if you heard this. Like he's not going to do it. She's like, I'm going to get him. Like it's going to happen. And don't worry, I know what I'm doing. And yeah, I love that. But anyway, I think yeah, this would be. I'm trying to think what my favorite Norton performance. It might be this or Fight Club. I would have to say like really shows what he's capable of. Yeah.
I definitely agree, and I think also then on the flip side of that, what I like about Kingdom of Heaven, aside from the fact that I think it's like one of the most fair depictions of Muslim characters, and probably like the most like even-keeled version of the Crusades we've ever gotten on film, is everything that Norton does, although he's like wearing the mask, right? Like you don't
Yes.
see
Yeah.
Norton's face because he is playing a leader who has leprosy, and so he is wearing this like ornate silver mask. But just what he does with his voice and how he's able to project this man who knows that he is dying and is worried about
Yeah.
what's going to happen to his family and to Jerusalem and to sort of what's going to happen to this group of Christians who do not just want to go into the Crusades again, and like, what's his legacy? There's a lot there, I think, that speaks to your comment about Norton always seeming like the guy who wanted to dive into those sorts of ethically
Yeah.
complex roles. And then just the challenge of doing it all from the perspective of us not being able to see
I
him.
know. Well, so many actors, oh man, they love do I get facial hair? I'm gonna go for a mustache, or do I, the costumes sometimes will help them find the character. And so, this is the inner theater kid. You can just imagine, like he's like, oh, they're only going to see my eyes and my voice. And today it'd probably just be like anybody in a mat and then CG. And then he's like standing in a studio and just doing the voiceover. And it'd
I
be
mean,
like a
that's what we
whole.
have. Yeah, that's
Yeah.
what we have with something like The Mandalorian. Like, it
Yeah.
was Pedro Pascal, I think, for the first couple seasons, but I believe it was definitively not him for season three.
Yeah.
Everything was just 80 yard and whatever. That is also acting. But yes, I think that there is something
Something
that you
to the
get by being
physicality.
in the scene.
Yeah.
Yeah, by doing the physicality. And yeah,
Feeding
that is
off each
also a,
other.
yes, that is a very treasured Norton performance for me. And while I don't think Orlando Bloom is like bad in that movie, like I think he's fine, he's adequate. But again, two-hander, Norton is just like stealing the show.
Yeah, I was never, I don't know if I was just like, although I think he's in my age little bracket there a couple of years, but never like an Orlando Bloom. I don't know. He just seemed young. He just seemed kind of like maybe like the pretty, I don't know. I was never a Bloom person. So I would have been the weirdo. I had not seen this film that was like the guy with his face wrapped up. Like that's who I'm waiting
That's
for.
my guy.
Yeah, so I would have been like the weirdest person in this auditorium, but I had never seen this movie. It I like what he does with it. I think it's interesting. If you held a gun to my head and asked me to explain the whole plot and like every could not do it, I'd be here dead. The podcast would go on. It was
Knocking
not
on
my
wood.
favorite. Thank goodness that you told me about the director's cut, because reading more about it, I think I dodged a bullet there. But yeah, it was interesting. It was not my favorite, but he was, it was cool to see, to contrast these other parts for sure.
I'm glad that you were able to check it out. I do think it is like the secret Edward Norton performance that you tell like real acting heads about. You're like, hey, did you know that Edward Norton was in this great movie by Ridley Scott? I know that we are close to being out of time, if not out of time. I'm wondering if there is a last Norton performance that we haven't talked about yet that like is really important for you.
Let me see. I'm on the IMDb page. Oh, Down in the Valley for sure.
Say more.
I think that is such an interesting film. It's very Taxi Driver. It feels very 70s. Like this would have been a film had it been made then that probably would have gotten somebody like Norton to get interested in film. I think it's fat. I'm a huge fan of David Morse. So I love what Morse is doing. Evan Rachel Wood is brilliant. It's almost impossible to find. Maybe it's streaming now. I don't think it is, or I have no idea. This is another one I saw in the theater, I think, for all three of those people. I
Jen's
loved it.
commitment to theater viewing is
Yes.
just
I live by
amazing.
an art house, and so I was like just always there. Yes.
I'm trying to think about what mine is. Like, I feel like I mostly like all of the Wes Anderson collabs.
Yeah, they're very
Like, I think
good.
that
Different
he's
side of them.
good in them, different side of him. I do like Birdman, although I agree with you. I think I really liked Birdman upon first watch, and then like every subsequent watch, I'm like, it like
Yeah.
slightly loses something for me. But I'm gonna be honest and say, I think it's the Knives Out sequel.
Oh, he's great in that. Yeah.
Yeah, which is I sort of have my own frustrations with those movies. And I do think we overall have overused like Elon Musk stand-ins as
Yeah.
villains, just because they do all sort of like read the same way and act the same way.
Yeah. They're very James Bond. Yeah.
Yes, but his version of that sort of character
Is
is just
hilarious. Yeah.
so wonderfully dumb. Like
Yes.
the reveal in the end of the movie that like he's just been saying nonsense words for a lot of
Yeah.
time. You need someone of like Norton's bearing and sort of gravitas to
Yep.
make a character that stupid, that successfully stupid.
Yeah.
And the bit in that film where we like meet him in flashback when he is like trying to be like an up and coming like entrepreneur and he's dressed like Tom Cruise from Magnolia. Like there's just a lot of these little flourishes that I think are like very fun and only someone, like you mentioned in Fight Club, that Brad Pitt is sort of like playing off his persona and that Norton does that in Birdman. I think also to a certain degree he might be doing it in Glass Onion, playing someone who thinks he's a lot smarter than everyone else and maybe being too confident in that. But yeah, I didn't realize that that would sort of become like a background rewatch movie for me, but I
Yeah.
find myself doing it because like Norton and Daniel Craig are just having like a very good time, I think,
Yes.
playing characters who just can't stand each other.
Yeah.
And Norton is like very good at that. So I am glad to see him in something like outside of Wes Anderson, if only because I want him to be doing more and the kind of role that lets him be still threatening because he's so good at that, but with a little bit of like a lighter touch.
Absolutely. No, I love what you were saying. I think that is such an inspired performance. And you know, to cap it off, I'm going to be like, guys, if you haven't seen Keeping the Faith, see Keeping the Faith and The Painted
Please.
Veil. I love that movie. I'm a sucker for a period romance. Yes.
I also think, and I don't think this movie is good, but I do think if you've seen The Prestige, you probably should see The
Oh my God, The
Illusionist.
Illusionist is gorgeous. I love that film. Thank you, Roxanna.
I don't love it as
I
much as I
do.
love The Prestige, but I think Norton's really good, you know? And
Yes.
it's one of those weird things where you get the two movies that are like sort of similar, and one ends up being like way more beloved than the other. I think if you
Yeah. Oh, they're very
ever
different
watched,
films, but
they're very
yeah.
different.
And they're
And if
both
you,
great, but.
yeah, and if you've ever watched a Norton performance, I do think you owe it to yourself to do Illusionist.
It is Norton doing a Norton thing, which without like giving a spoiler, I love that film. Yes. I think I might have covered it. I've covered too many movies. Like a year ago, I did an episode with Jessica Ellis on supernatural and kind of magic movies. And I think we talked about how much we loved that. Yeah. So that's a really good one. Oh, I
You've
would have
done
been
too
kicking
much,
myself.
Jen. That's the problem. You're just
No.
too prolific.
So are you. I don't know how you're writing all of these brilliant pieces, but I'm so glad you are. I will be sure to link to the 25th hour essay when this episode
Thank
goes
you.
up. But
Thank
Roxanne, I want to thank you so much for doing this. It's always just the biggest pleasure to talk to you and, you know, cover movies and talk about life and philosophy and America and the world and all of that existential good stuff, right?
Thank you, Jen. Thank you for always being the person who I'm battling my own, like, do I feel up for this? Like, do I want to do this? Like, will I be a drag? And then I see your face and I'm like, no, it's Jen. Like, it's going to be great. And it always is great. So I thank you for
Oh,
that. Thank you for
of
having me
course.
on.
Anytime you want to come back, come back. I also want to thank everyone for listening, especially my patrons who support the show and help fund my research equipment, film rentals, RSS fees, and more for as little as a dollar per month at the Film Intuition Patreon, which is the home base for the show. Other ways you can support the podcast are by sharing, reviewing, and subscribing to Watch with Jen wherever you get your podcasts, and also checking out the cool merch store hosted and created by our talented logo designer, Kate Gabrielle. You can find the merchandise store, including shirts, tote bags, stickers, and more, by visiting filmintuition.com and clicking on the shop link. The show's theme music is Solo Acoustic Guitar by Jason Shaw and is available in the free music archive. You can also reach me or interact with Watch with Jen anytime on Twitter, either at Film Intuition or our Watch with Jen account as well. Well, until next time, please take care and happy movie watching.
This is Jen Johans at filmintuition.com and Film Intuition on social media and Letterboxd. And this is Watch with Jen.